We've been working our way through the book of Genesis, and we've reached chapter 8. We've not got very far, but we've been working our way slowly. There's a lot in it. Genesis chapter 8, verses 1 to 22. The flood has taken place, and here's where we pick it up. But God remembered Noah and all the wild animals and the livestock that were with him in the ark. And he sent a wind over the earth, and the waters receded. Now the springs of the deep and the floodgates of the heavens had been closed, and the rain had stopped falling from the sky. The water receded steadily from the earth. At the end of the 150th days, the water had gone down, and on the 17th day of the 7th month, the ark came to rest on the mountains of Ararat. The waters continued to recede until the 10th month, and on the first day of the 10th month, the tops of the mountains became visible. After 40 days, Noah opened a window he had made in the ark and sent out a raven, and it kept flying back and forth until the water had dried up from the earth. Then he sent out a dove to see if the water had receded from the surface of the ground. But the dove could find nowhere to perch because there was water over all the surface of the earth. So it returned to Noah in the ark. He reached out his hand and took the dove and brought it back to himself in the ark. He waited 7 more days and again sent out the dove from the ark. When the dove returned to him in the evening, there in its beak was a freshly plucked olive leaf. Then Noah knew that the water had receded from the earth. He waited 7 more days and sent the dove out again, but this time it did not return to him. By the first day of the first month of Noah's 601st year, the water had dried up from the earth. Noah then removed the covering from the ark and saw that the surface of the ground was dry. By the 27th day of the second month, the earth was completely dry. Then God said to Noah, "Come out of the ark, you and your wife and your sons and their wives. Bring out every kind of living creature that is with you, the birds, the animals, and all the creatures that move along the ground, so they can multiply on the earth and be fruitful and increase in number on it." So Noah came out, together with his sons and his wife and his sons' wives, all the animals and all the creatures that moved along the ground, and all the birds, everything that moves on the earth, came out of the ark, one kind after another. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord, and taking some of all the clean animals and clean birds, he sacrificed burnt offerings on it. The Lord smelled the pleasing aroma and said in his heart, "Never again will I curse the ground because of human beings, even though every inclination of the human heart is evil from childhood. And never again will I destroy all living creatures as I have done. As long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night will never cease." I wonder whether anyone here has ever been in a situation they didn't really want to be in, or ever found themselves desperate to be free from certain circumstances which have taken over their lives. I remember I was in London on the 30th of June 1998, and I'd been visiting Simon at work at the Elephant and Castle, and I was just about to go home, so I walked up to the Elephant and Castle in the hope of getting a bus. If you haven't been there, it's quite a big junction with loads of buses and a huge tube station, and at that time, the Stephen Lawrence inquiry was taking place. If you're unaware of what that was, it was an inquiry into the death of a young black boy, Stephen Lawrence, who was killed earlier. And there were 5 suspects at the time who were all white males. And they were there that day at the Stephen Lawrence inquiry. So as I ambled up the road to get my bus, little did I realise that as I got to the Elephant and Castle, these young suspects were coming out of the Elephant and Castle, and that a 200-strong crowd had been waiting for these men to come out. And they'd been waiting so they could hurl abuse at them, throw bottles, try and get their hands on them, because people were convinced that these men had killed Stephen Lawrence. So I found myself in the middle of quite a violent crowd. I couldn't get to the bus, and so I thought, I need to get to the train. And so I was battling through, and there were bottles being thrown, and there was shouting, and there was abuse, and I was frightened, I have to say. I was like, I just want to get the bus home. And eventually I made it to the tube station, and I was standing on the platform, and even as I was standing there, and the suspects had been taken away, bottles were being hurled up from the main road over the bridge onto the railway line. And I was desperate for my train to come. I just wanted to get out. The circumstances were way out of my control, and there's nothing I could do, but I didn't want to be in this situation. And I just wanted to get home. Because when we're in a situation that we don't want to be in, or when we find ourselves in circumstances that are beyond our control and we can do nothing about them, whether it be caused by violence or illness or work pressures or family or children or friends, whatever it might be, our initial response is to want to get away or to want to make it better so that everything is okay, to find a solution to the problem that we're in. And so I guess as we work our way through the book of Genesis and we get to Genesis chapter 8 and we find Noah confined in an ark, surrounded only by water and sky, we can imagine maybe the kind of feelings that he might have had at that time. Because let's face it, not only had Noah been stuck inside this floating box for over 150 days, nearly 6 months, he had also been surrounded by all kinds of animals. And maybe what's even worse, his own family for 6 months. He was unable to get out on his own. He was unable to take a break. He was unable to go and get some fresh air. He was unable to get away from the confines that were around him. It must have been a little bit like Christmas, except for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. Everyone crammed together in one space. I'm surprised, actually, that they all got out in one piece. But, you know, even though Noah had initially responded to God's grace, and even though he'd agreed to build an ark, to collect animals, to shut the doors when the rains came down, and to carry out God's plan, there must have come a point when this righteous man found things difficult. There must have come a point when he struggled to come to terms with the circumstances that were beyond his control. I mean, the earth was covered in water. All he had ever known was hidden from sight. Every life form outside of the ark was dead. This must have been a pretty bleak time, even for a man who we're told walked faithfully with God. I can imagine he may even have entertained the thought that he would never escape this situation that he'd found himself in. And yet, as Noah and his family and hundreds of animals were bobbing about on the water, unable to do anything about the circumstances they found themselves in, we're told, right at the beginning of this passage, that God remembered. God remembered Noah and all the wild animals and the livestock that were with him in the ark. And he set about changing the situation that Noah was in. Not, of course, that God had forgotten Noah, not that he'd overlooked him in the first place. I mean, after all, Noah was basically the only person left alive. So it wasn't that God had been so intent on destruction that he'd forgotten all about him, you know, having so much fun destroying and killing and wiping out humankind, that he'd quite forgotten he'd left someone alive. It wasn't that. Rather, when we read God remembered, what we're really reading is that God was mindful. That's what the word means. God was mindful. That rather than forgetting about Noah and then suddenly remembering him, God was mindful
throughout the 150 days of destruction, God had always remembered Noah. Throughout the time of devastation, God was watching Noah. God was aware of Noah. God was alert. God was attentive. God was observant of this man who was faithfully walking with him. In fact, he'd never taken his eyes off him. Until finally, God had chosen this moment to act, shutting the floodgates, closing the heavens, sending the wind, and allowing the waters to recede. God remembered and God acted. And if we think about it, this image of God is one that we find again and again throughout the Bible. God remembers and God acts. For instance, he remembered Moses in the wilderness and he called him to lead his people out of slavery. God remembered and God acted. He remembered his people in the wilderness and he led them into the promised land. He remembered Samson in prison, rotting away, and he gave him strength once more. He remembered David and he rescued him from Saul. He remembered Elijah and he saved him from starvation. He remembered Daniel and he shut the mouths of the lions. He remembered again and again and again, being watchful and observant and attentive, even though lots of people in the Bible thought that God had forgotten them. God remembered. And here he remembers Noah. And if we follow that thought through, then it's fair to say that God also remembers us as well. When we're in situations we don't like, when we're in places we don't want to be, when we're living a life we desperately want to change, God remembers. Even when life seems pretty bleak and things are totally out of our control, and we entertain the thought that actually we might never see an end to the situation we're in, God remembers. Or if you like, God is alert, he's observant, he's attentive, he's watchful, he's aware of our lives and the pressures that are upon us at any given time. And at some point or other in our lives, just like Noah's, he promises to act, to change the situation. But interestingly, when God chooses to act, this is often when things become a little bit tricky. Because when God remembered Noah, when he was mindful of his situation and he acted to bring change, he didn't simply transform Noah's circumstances overnight. He didn't click his fingers and make everything all right. In fact, it took well over another 6 months before Noah could finally escape the box in which he'd been confined. There was no instant transformation, no immediate solution. And the frustration that Noah must have felt would have been unbearable. The temptation to rush ahead of God and to try and make things better, to seek dry land for himself, to get out of the boat, to try and solve things. It must have been hard. And yet, even though God seemed to be taking an inordinate amount of time to make the waters go away and to bring dry land about again, even though everything was as it was for 6 months, Noah was patient and Noah waited. Instead of seeking to escape the circumstances he was in by his own strength and his own means and his own ideas, Noah waited. He waited for God to work his wonders on the earth again. And that's really hard, isn't it? I mean, it's hard enough believing that God is mindful of us when we're in a situation that we don't really want to be in, when life is tough and difficult. But to be patient while God acts and to wait for God's creative initiative to bring about a solution instead of ploughing ahead with our own plans and our own ideas, well, that's something that human beings find almost impossible. And yet, if Noah had done his own thing, if he ploughed ahead, he would have almost certainly perished. And so he waited. He waited. But by waiting, he didn't just sit back and do nothing. Or he didn't concoct his own plans just in case God failed. Or he didn't get frustrated because God wasn't doing what he thought he should do. Instead, he waited with God. He sent out questions. He sent out a raven. He sent out a dove. Is it ready yet? Are you ready, Lord? He sent these things out. He prepared himself. He was ready to leave the ark when the doors opened. He didn't just suddenly have to rush around getting everyone ready. He waited with expectation that God's plan would finally come to fruition. He waited with God and walked with God. And you know, whatever situation we find ourselves in, whatever circumstances seem to take over our lives, the hardest thing to do is to wait, and to wait with God, walking with him. We're very good, I think, sometimes at sitting back and doing nothing, expecting God to magic a solution. And we're even better at concocting our own plans just in case God fails. Because, you know, we believe in him, but I just want to have my plans ready. But we're not always very good at waiting with him, questioning him through our troubles. Why is it happening, Lord? That's waiting, that's questioning, that's finding out, preparing ourselves for when God chooses to lead us on. Or even we're not so good at expecting God's plans to come to fruition. We expect God to do things. And yet as we read this passage and we see Noah walking with God and doing these very things, then if we're to walk with God, we need to learn to trust God's hand on our lives and to wait with him until he's ready to lead us on. So Noah waited and God remembered until finally he stepped out of the ark, out of the circumstances in which he had been confined, and into the beginnings of a brand new world. And to be honest, it must have been pretty difficult. Because, you know, all that Noah had known, all that was familiar, had gone. It had been wiped away. The land was devastated, the earth was empty, the future was scary and uncertain. Life was very different to what it had been a year before. And it was never, ever going to be the same again. It was never going to be the same again. Do you know, it makes me think, not that the flooding of the earth and the destruction of humankind is similar, but it makes me think of when I moved from London to Cottenham. Not similar at all. But, you know, when you move house, you're excited and you're looking forward to it, but you don't really think through the massive changes that it will have upon your life. And when I arrived in Cottenham, when we arrived in Cottenham, immediately I knew that life was going to be very different. In London, we lived on the South Circular, which is one of the main roads through London. And so 24/7 it was busy and loud, and there was people about all the time. There was a buzz. It was alive. And you know, partly I'm quite relieved to be out of that, but moving to Cottenham and being in that London thought process was shocking. I didn't know where everyone was. I remember someone saying to me, it'd probably be quite good to have your bedroom at the back of the house because of the noise of the road at the front. Do you know our road? I mean, we maybe get two cars up there a day. And I was like, shocked. It was different. It was also a little bit lonely because your home is no longer where it was, but it's neither where you are. You haven't got used to things. You haven't put your roots down. So you feel you haven't got any home for a while. And it required a lot of energy to settle in, to feel comfortable, to build a home. The future seemed scary and uncertain, even in Cottenham, scary and uncertain. And for a while, looking back to what we had known in London was a very tempting thing to do. And it must have been very tempting for Noah as well. Because when he stepped off the ark, or if you like, when he moved house in quite a dramatic fashion, when the doors of the ark finally opened and he touched dry land for the first time in over a year, he was looking at a very different landscape. And not just a very different landscape, but a totally devastated world with nothing recognisable for him to hang on to. And so the temptation to look back to the world that he had known must have been immense. And yet, Noah, this righteous man who walked faithfully with God, instead of looking back, chose to do something different. He chose to worship. As he stepped off the ark into the wasteland, which was his new home, Noah worshipped God. That was the first thing that he did. And it wasn't a quick, oh, thank you for rescuing me. It was full-on worship. He sacrificed the best animals that he had, probably the animals that would have kept him alive for the next few months if he had chosen to eat them, but instead he chose to sacrifice them, all of them. It was a whole offering. He didn't eat any of it. He sacrificed it all to God. Because in these unfamiliar surroundings, in this muddy wasteland, which was now his new home, Noah first and foremost saw the importance of dedicating his life to God. Everything that was important to him, he dedicated to God. And in return, God promised to sustain him from that day on. As long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night will never cease, said God. I will sustain you in this unfamiliar, scary landscape. And you know, sometimes when we go through difficult times, or when times change in life, it doesn't have to be difficult, it could just be a change, something new, something different. The landscape in which we find ourselves, if not devastated, is certainly unfamiliar. And it's a little uncomfortable, and it can seem a bit daunting. It's not always where we want to be. And the temptation is to look back to what things were like and to somehow wish it could be the same. When actually, the unfamiliar surroundings we find ourselves in, the change in our circumstance, the uncertainty of life, rather than being a bad thing and making life worse, gives us opportunity. Each change, each unfamiliarity gives us opportunity to dedicate our lives to God again, to worship him, to offer him all we have, and to acknowledge that whatever we go through, he will sustain us and be with us.